Blog Talk Radio.
Southern trees that strange fruit, blood on the leaves and blood at the root, black bodies swing in the southern breeze, strange fruit hanging from the poplar trees. Pasture of scenes of the gallant south. Bulging eyes and the twisted mouth, scent of magnolia, sweet and fresh. Then the sudden smell of burning flesh. Here is a fruit for the crows to pluck, for the rain to gather, for the wind to suck, for the sun to rock, for the tree dry. Here is a strange and bitter cry.
Welcome to the Sunday show. This is Gwen Berry. I'm joined by Jack Jodell and F. Wayne Johnson. And that was Ms. Billie Holiday singing Abel Meeropol's Strange Fruit.
Beautiful choice, and congratulations to Wayne for thinking of that. And, boy, in view of what's happened this past week, that was an excellent choice, I would say.
I'm all full disclosure. I think Gwen already had it keyed up. I was just saying that that would be a good one, but I think she already had it lined up. So.
Well, great minds think alike.
There we go. I'll go with that one now.
Abel Meeropol was a white man who lived in the Bronx, and he saw pictures of lynching, and he wrote that song. And he was also the man who adopted the Rosenberg's children after they were executed. So we're talking far left. But the occasion this last week of the church in Charleston is just heartbreaking.
Oh, it's outrageous.
Absolutely.
A real tragedy.
As I passed on, I was stationed in Charleston, South Carolina. And, I knew that there was a quiet racism, you know, still trying to do some apartheid kind of segregation with their policies. But never to the extreme that they would go into a church and murder six people.
Yeah.
Nine people, I'm sorry.
From Oakland to Ferguson to sidewalks in New York. And the point is Black Lives Matter. That's the campaign.
Yes.
And this is the reason. I'm going to play you a piece, a TED Talk. It's only 5 minutes by Clint Smith. And it will explain to people, because I've had so many friends and even family say to me, but all lives matter. well, yes, of course, all lives matter. But this campaign is about Black Lives Matter, and this is why.
Growing up, I didn't always understand why my parents made me follow the rules that they did. Like, why did I really have to mow the lawn? Why was homework really that important? Why couldn't I put jelly beans in my oatmeal? My childhood was abound with questions like this. Normal things about being a kid and realizing that sometimes it was best to listen to my parents even when I didn't exactly understand why. And it's not that they didn't want me to think critically. Their parenting always sought to reconcile the tensions between having my siblings and I understand the realities of the world while ensuring that we never accepted the status quo as inevitable. I came to realize that this, in and of itself, was a very purposeful form of education. One of my favorite educators, Brazilian author and scholar Paulo Freire, speaks quite explicitly about the need for education to be used as a tool for critical awakening and shared humanity. In his most famous book, Pedagogy of the Oppressed, he states, "No one can be authentically human while he prevents others from being so." Now, I've been thinking a lot about this lately, this idea of humanity, and specifically who in this world is afforded the privilege of being perceived as fully human. Over the course of the past several months, the world has watched as unarmed Black men and women have had their lives taken at the hands of police and vigilantes. These events and all that has transpired after them have brought me back to my own childhood and the decisions that my parents made about raising a Black boy in America that growing up I didn't always understand in the way that I do now. I think of how hard it must have been, how profoundly unfair it must have felt for them to feel like they had to strip away parts of my childhood just so that I could come home at night. For example, I think of how one night when I was around 12 years old on an overnight field trip to another city, my friends and I bought Super Soakers and turned the hotel parking lot into our own water-filled battle zone. We hid behind cars, running through the darkness that lay between the streetlights, boundless laughter ubiquitous across the pavement. But within 10 minutes, my father came outside, grabbed me by my forearm, and led me into our room with an unfamiliar grip. Before I could say anything, tell him how foolish he had made me look in front of my friends, he derided me for being so naive. Looked me in the eye, fear consuming his face. He said, "Son, I'm sorry, but you can't act the same as your white friend. You can't pretend to shoot guns. You can't run around in the dark. You can't hide behind anything other than your own teeth. I know now how scared he must have been, how easily I could have fallen into the empty of the night, that some man would mistake this water for a good reason to wash all of this away." These are the sorts of messages I've been inundated with my entire life. Always keep your hands so they can see them. Don't move too quickly. Take off your hood when the sun goes down. My parents raised me and my siblings in an armor of advice, an ocean of alarm bells so someone wouldn't steal the breath from our lungs, so that they wouldn't make a memory of this skin, so that we could be kids, not casket or concrete. And it's not because they thought it would make us better than anyone else. It's simply because they wanted to keep us alive. All of my Black friends were raised with the same message, the talk given to us when we became old enough to be mistaken for a nail ready to be hammered to the ground, when people made our melanin synonymous with something to be feared. But what does it do to a child to grow up knowing that you cannot simply be a child, that the whims of adolescence are too dangerous for your breath, that you cannot simply be curious, that you are not afforded the luxury of making a mistake, that someone's implicit bias might be the reason you don't wake up in the morning? But this cannot be what defines us, because we had parents who raised us to understand that our bodies weren't meant for the backside of a bullet, but for flying kites and jumping rope and laughing until our stomachs burst. We had teachers who taught us how to raise our hands in class and not just to signal surrender, and that the only thing we should give up is the idea that we aren't worthy of this world. So when we say that Black lives matter, it's not because others don't. It's simply because we must affirm that we are worthy of existing without fear when so many things tell us we are not. I want to live in a world where my son will not be presumed guilty the moment he is born, where a toy in his hand isn't mistaken for anything other than a toy, and I refuse to accept that we can't build this world into something new, some place where a child's name doesn't have to be written on a T-shirt or a tombstone, where the value of someone's life isn't determined by anything other than the fact that they had lungs, a place where every single one of us can breathe. Thank you.
What a beautiful illustration of something we take for granted, white privilege. You know, we don't even think about, you know, going on the street at night. We give it no second thought because we know chances are very great that the police will not bother us. They won't handcuff us. They won't shoot us. But blacks don't enjoy that same privilege.
Shame on
us. Exactly.
Yeah, it's a very interesting, very prolific. Unfortunately, and the thing is just right before we went on the air, the got into with the young lad who did the shooting there in that church, had a manifesto on the internet, and basically his manifesto was that Trayvon Martin was the one at fault and Zimmerman was in the right, and been filled with such right-wing conservative pandering that you hear on blowhard radio.
Yeah, it's
that
insane.
I'm not saying that, you know, this cost it, but this kid, obviously, who had mental issues, was fueled and stimulated by this kind of rhetoric coming out of the right wing or the right side of our political spectrum.
Right.
Which just, to me, speaks volumes of how inaccurate and how much of an atrocity that viewpoint really is.
I have something to say about that, too. I can feel great sadness and grief, not just here in the South, but over this incident, but among people in general. It's black, white, Maya, Hispanic, it's all around. And you really need to read that kid's manifesto. It's printed on Huffington Post. I wasn't so angry as I was so deeply saddened by his pouring out these qualifiers for his racism.
He's nuts.
Kind in saying so, and it's stunning, and it's deeply depressing in considering how many will cling to it, to hear our public leadership clinging to it in their denials of it. He condescends over all of humanity and its justifications, and I think everyone should take a peek and read that thing.
Good advice.
I agree.
Good advice. Yep. Right. Yeah, this kid was trying to rekindle a new civil war, and he wanted to start a race war is what he was trying to do. This guy he's wacko, but there's a lot of them out there.
Right, that's the sad thing. There's too many of them.
Too many of them.
And was he working strictly on his own? Did he actually, if you read this manifesto, you got to wonder whether this kid actually came up with it or if he didn't cobble it off of another, you know, racist manifesto site. It really...
Well, they're all over the place.
I was gonna say, he probably heard it at home. He heard it among the peers of his parents. You know, it's just like the that area there in Florida that is so heavily Klan populated on north of the Fort Lauderdale area that we've spoken about before, Gwen, and in Florida there.
Well, it's way
and it became so desensitized and thinking that this is the correct way of thinking by this hate-filled rhetoric.
Yeah. Well, and then there's the issue that's come up on the side of this, and I have to say that the president's remarks this week were right on target, too, especially about the stars and bars. The Confederate flag, I'm used to seeing. But I got to tell you, I've taken trips. I used to live up in the mountains of North Carolina. I was working on a small weekly newspaper there for a couple of years. And where the editor, who was a wonderful woman, who was not a racist, but was head of the Republican Party, and her best buddy was Jesse Helms. Now, hey, guys, you have not...
And she was not a racist?
No, she's not. She's one of my dearest friends. No, she just would look the other way. She'd say, you know what, we've got to listen to this to get to here. and you know, the lesser evil. But I mean, you guys haven't lived till you sat down with Gwen at the same table with a drink in your hand, and one of the people at the table is Jesse Helms. There was problems. He called me some choice names. I am so proud.
I'm sure he did.
My editor defended Big Neighbor, who was the DA from the next county that had been a Key West cop for years. We used to sit down and smoke a joint at the bottom of her hill. He was, here's a cop sitting with you having a great...
Oh, it happens.
It was the widest spectrum. They were either vehemently racist or they were surprisingly enlightened people. But the point is that this young man's manifesto... It sounded like so many people I have heard over the years in the Deep South. I don't mean Florida either. Florida,
right.
Above the I-4.
Say, Gwen, the Eastern Shore. I tell people here in Ohio, I said, look, I grew up in an area, even when I was in my early 20s, still had black and white over the bathroom doors. You know, the young ones didn't, you know, the older ones would still obey and assimilate to what they had grown up with. The younger ones, like my classmates and stuff, you know, we didn't really give it a second look. We just went about our business and, you know, and as we would normally do.
Mm-hmm.
But like I said, but then again, there was still a bunch of those good old boys who I will say are members of the Tea Party, of the Republican Party branch.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
They're on the Eastern Shore of Maryland, the First District of Maryland, that are still spouting that exact same stuff that we're just talking about.
Yeah, they rise up every few years and really make a lot of noise, and then they recede for a little while. It's an ebb and flow constantly, and it's when it's flowing, it's bad. So,
you know what, Jeff? I don't think there's an ebb and flow. I think it's constant.
Well, it seems to make more headway at certain points in time, and there's been a huge rise in militia groups ever since Obama was elected, because he's
right.
A black man and all that stuff, and they've just come out of the woodwork, and that's documented by the Southern Poverty Law Center. There's a huge rise in those across the entire country, you know, these people are wacky. And they're out there and they're walking free, and there's a certain amount of them are going to pull off what this 21-year-old idiot did in a church. They're going to go in there and blow people away. Just another mass murder and another needless murder, because a goof that didn't deserve to have a gun had one.
Well, let me refer to this. If it had been a Muslim had a gun and does it, it was terrorism.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I don't care what the cause was. This was nothing more than a right-wing conservative terrorist.
Right. And he was a terrorist. Let's call
exactly.
it by what it
that's,
is.
Let's call that's it exactly.
That's what you call a Muslim that did something like that. And
right.
why should we soft-pedal it because he's a white kid? This is insane.
Right.
It is terrorism.
It's
mass
terrorist.
Murder, it's terrorism. It's thoroughly bad, period. There's no excuse for it.
And I have to agree with Glenn. There is always that underlying current. It's always underlying there. About what we're talking about, this animosity, this racism aspect across the country.
Yeah.
Right? And but yes, every once in a while it does rear its ugly head, but it's always an underlying current.
And then, of course, all the right-wing pundits are out there making all kinds of noise about it right beforehand. Tell us a little bit about what Huckabee had to say, but he was echoing what I heard an executive on the NRA say, that this particular pastor that was killed by this creepy kid was one of the victims. It was in the state Senate there, and he had voted against conceal and carry in South Carolina. And this guy said, just flippantly said, well, he was a victim of politics because had he voted and were they able to pass conceal and carry laws, you know, a lot of those people could have been saved because they would have had guns in church. Oh, how utterly ridiculous. You know, how preposterous.
If you have to arm yourself, let's just know. Let's run down that statement to its common denominator.
Yeah.
If you have to carry a gun into church to protect yourself, that doesn't say very much for your religion.
It sure
right?
does.
Or your religious
absolutely.
Beliefs.
Yeah, so that's insane.
In the time between the shooting and now, there have been 3 other major incidents in cities across the country. I don't know if you're aware. There was a shooting at the Detroit basketball court during a block party.
Wow.
There was another incident.
Was that between gangs or?
No, it was a neighborhood block party that was going on.
Somebody got too drunk and had a gun and started shooting people.
Yeah, people got out of hand. It's the idea that these guns are, you know, anything but trouble. I mean, you travel abroad. I mean, I've done a lot of traveling abroad.
Oh, yeah. They don't have guns the way we do.
Right, in Denmark.
Some countries are forbidden to have them. That's common sense.
Well, basically, it's not that they're forbidden. Well, there's just a
culturally
lot.
Culturally forbidden, they just don't do it.
Right, they don't. They lots of hunters with rifles, shotguns, all kinds. But the only people that have small handguns or handguns are people who are in a business of needing them, like the military or the police.
Right.
Let's remember the police. The police, the cavalry, they don't carry a sidearm. The gendarmes have only begun.
Right.
The bobbies in the police in the UK and Ireland, in Ireland, in Dublin, and in Northern Ireland, they've carried. I've always seen a sidearm on them, but that's because of the troubles. Italy, you didn't see that happening, and. There's a lot more small-town life that's close to the city, and exchange of lifestyle goes back and forth. It's as if the cities, the urban areas of Europe, have a deep regard for the country, and the country has a deep regard for the urban areas. There's a mutual respect there. There's not this cultural fractionizing that goes on here in our country. I mean, I would say that a lot of that stems from the, you know, the South and the redneck situation and all
redneck,
of that.
Redneck, yeah. Egomaniacs.
Or a cowboy.
Too much testosterone.
Well, like I said, everybody thinks they're a cowboy. The way you can settle a problem is, I had a bigger gun than him. That made me right.
Yeah, that's right, exactly. You know, we are really, truly a nation of paradox because we're supposedly the land of the free, but we have far more people in prison per capita than any other country on the entire globe. How can we defend this? You know, if we're that much of a nation of lawbreakers, doesn't that say something about how corrupt or how bad our society really is? Do we need to have all these people in jail? What is going on here?
Well, when you have
the guns we have, everybody and their brother has a gun.
Well, you got guys like Ted Cruz cracking jokes about gun control today.
Yeah,
I mean,
disgusting.
And you've got guys like what's his name, Chuck Todd, who they hand the steerage of.
He is such a wimp.
And he pulls a crime film talking about Charleston, and all of the armed people in it are black. I mean, that kind of screwing up is just, that's ridiculous.
Oh. Yeah.
And the judge in Charleston who's sitting on this case has been known to use racial epithets in court.
Wow.
How charming. It's obviously a good Christian man.
Oh, yeah. Said with great sarcasm. That's very true.
Boy.
It's really.
I bet he goes to church with a gun in his pocket, huh?
Well, who knows?
Probably does.
I got another little bit to play for you here. You need to hear this, and you're gonna think, Gwen played that, but I'm going to, because whether it's lip service or not, these are the words that needed to be put out there by leadership in this country this week.
Mm-hmm. The president is right. The politics on this issue have been poisoned. But we can't give up. The stakes are too high. The costs are too dear. And I am not and will not be afraid to keep fighting for common sense reform and, along with you, achieve those on behalf of all who have been lost because of this senseless gun violence in our country.
Good job, Hillary.
Yeah.
But today,
good job, Hillary.
I'm here for you because I know and you know there is a deeper challenge we face. I had the great privilege of representing America around the world. I was so proud to share our example, our diversity, our openness, our devotion to human rights and freedom. These qualities have drawn generations of immigrants to our shores, and they inspire people still. I have seen it with my own eyes. And yet, bodies are once again being carried out of a black church. Once again, racist rhetoric has metastasized into racist violence. Now, it's tempting.
Well stated.
It is tempting to dismiss a tragedy like this as an isolated incident.
Oh.
To believe that in today's America, bigotry is largely behind us. That institutionalized racism no longer exists. But despite our best efforts and our highest hopes, America's long struggle with race is far from finished.
Lester.
I know this is a difficult topic to talk about. I know that so many of us hope by electing our first black president, we had turned the page on this chapter in our history. I know there are truths we don't like to say out loud or discuss with our children. But we have to. That's the only way we can possibly move forward together. Race remains a deep fault line in America. Millions of people of color still experience racism in their everyday lives. Here are some facts. In America today, blacks are nearly three times as likely as whites to be denied a mortgage. In 2013, the median wealth of black families was around $11,000. For white families, it was more than $134,000. Nearly half of all black families have lived in poor neighborhoods for at least two generations, compared to just 7% of white families. African American men are far more likely to be stopped and searched by police, charged with crimes, and sentenced to longer prison terms than white men. 10% longer for the same crimes in the federal system.
And to be shot.
Today, our schools are more segregated than they were in the 1960s.
Yeah.
How can any of that be true? How can it be true that black children are 500% more likely to die from asthma than white kids? 500%. More than half a century after Dr. King marched and Rosa Parks sat and John Lewis bled, after the Civil Rights Act and the Voting Rights Act and so much else, how can any of these things be true? But they are. And our problem is not all kooks and Klansmen. It's also the cruel joke that goes unchallenged. It's the offhand comment about not wanting those people in the neighborhood. Let's be honest. for a lot of well-meaning, open-minded white people. The sight of a young black man in a hoodie still evoked a tinge of fear. And news reports about poverty and crime and discrimination evoke sympathy, even empathy. But too rarely do they spur us to action or prompt us to question our own assumptions and privilege. We can't hide from any of these hard truths about race and justice in America. We have to name them and own them and then change them. You may have heard about a woman in North Carolina named Debbie Dills.
Yeah.
She's the one who spotted Dylan Roof's car on the highway. She could have gone about her business. She could have looked to her own safety. But that's not what she did. She called the police, and then she followed that car for more than 30 miles. As Congressman Jim Clyburn said the other day, there may be a lot of Dylan Roofs in the world, but there are a lot of Debbie Dills, too. She didn't remain silent.
Gentlemen, I got to tell you.
What a great job.
I got to tell you, that is a woman's leadership right there.
Yes. Yep.
Agreed.
And the bitch has me choked up. I could just kick her.
That's right. Damn, she keeps that up. You're going to like her, right, Gwen?
Ridiculous.
Well, I'll tell you,
the point is
common
that
sense like that has no gender. That was tremendous.
I disagree.
Absolutely.
No matter who said it.
I disagree, Jack, because not one man has stood up to the podium this way, not even Bernie Sanders.
Oh, come on, Gwen. Let's not be silly here. For God's sake, Tom Hartman was all over this all week long. Now, he's not a public figure, but I don't care. It isn't just the virtue of women that are decrying this. Look at what we're doing. We're in agreement with you.
Of course, Jack, you're missing my point. I'm talking about leadership.
Right.
And government. Not one man has stood up yet so far and addressed it as directly and as with compassion as she has and made common sense. Not even Bernie. I watched him Friday night. He was great Friday night on Real Time. But he did not address it. Not once.
Uh-huh.
He did not. Not gun control. He talked about campaign and this. And, of course, he was led by Bill. But he could have broke in, and he did not.
Was that a live show? Or was that tape beforehand?
Real Time is live.
It is live.
It's 10 o'clock Friday night, 10 o'clock Eastern.
Yeah. Well, regardless, you know, she's the only woman, she's the only politician that dared to say anything about it. Good for her. I'm not castigating her at all.
Here's a thought that I've just had, and kind of a deja vu flashback for myself. For those of us old enough to remember, and for students much younger than us, the bombing of Birmingham Church in Alabama.
Oh, yeah, 1963.
Oh, yeah.
1963, because of hatred of blacks and their dare to be uppity,
yep.
Decided to plant
and
a
four
bomb.
Little girls
and
had to
four
die.
Four little girls were killed in the bathroom.
How
my
utterly
mother,
stupid.
My mother cried about that, and so did
yeah,
her
many of us did.
The neighbor. Sat down and cried about it. I was what? I do remember that, though. There
I
were
would have been 10 years old.
When
yeah, I would have been 10 years old.
When we were kids, maybe I was a little older. When we were kids, a lot of actions like this happened that were covered by the media in a different way than they are now.
Oh, exactly. Yes. Yeah. And that's one of the reasons that the civil rights movement gained such acceptance, and they were able to pass the bills that they were able to pass because at that point in time, white people's eyes were opened and their consciences were affected. Now, after years and years and years of civil rights acts and civil service reform and all kinds of affirmative action stuff, certain whites are getting tired of it all, and they just don't want to deal with it, even though it's still pervasive. And the problem has not been solved. but they just want it to go away because it's not fun for them, you know? That's the sad thing.
Well, Jack, I'll also interject here. Back then, news wasn't a program for profit.
Exactly.
It was actually
you got the real thing. You got real
investigative
journalism.
If it had a bitter taste and, boy, it's going to lose sales and, you know, I won't be able to sell advertising on this program, or we can't have that. That's just been the downfall of really of what our free...
Well, that's the corporatism of America doing that. You got five major corporations controlling all the news, almost all the news, and that's the tragedy of it all, and that's why we're getting dumbed to death with stupid shit about Kim Kardashian. Who cares, you know?
You're right.
As if that's news.
I got to say that I often sit back and I think about it, and I think that there's a war going on that the combatants include all of humanity, and it's between those who understand kindness and those who just violently reject it.
Oh,
I
man.
Mean, you know, we're it seems like we're in the early death throes of extinction here, or we're crossing the precipice into a new an evolution of our conscious awareness. What are we?
Well, it's too early to tell, but there are signs out there, and we'll know in a couple more weeks. Actually, July 12th, I'm going to throw a little teaser out here. I want everybody to tune into this show because we're going to have a very uplifting and positive pair of guests on who are trying to combat all the negativity out there and all the disrespect and the hatred. It's going to be a great show. So that's all I'm going to say about it. We'll talk about it later.
Kudos for landing that too, Jack. You did a very, very good job.
Yeah, well,
Gwen kind of
set the table on that one, so I thought I'd jump at it.
I was going to say, send that teaser out. Gee, Jack, what was that date again?
July 12th. So
July 12th, okay.
It's three Sundays from now, I think, 28th. Sundays from now, right?
Mark it on your calendar, listeners.
There you go, folks. You bet.
That's my sales and marketing come out.
That's good to say, though. Thank you very much for doing that. I mean...
Absolutely.
I really do think it makes a difference when leadership steps up and says something that's actually
and
right.
That's what we need so desperately today.
Yeah.
That's why it's very good of Hillary to do that, and hats off to her for that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I agree completely with that. I was very surprised to find it. And I was happy to hear it coming. I got to tell you, I was happy to hear it coming because I think women should be in politics in
mm-hmm.
a much larger way. Like Hillary.
Oh, I agree with you, Gwen.
Elizabeth and Warren. Like several women who are already out there, I'm not real happy about, you know, where the anchors are on Mrs. Clinton, but the point that she came to the microphone and she spoke those words with a great sincerity, it's a video.
Yes, yeah,
and
very good.
Watching it, it's very moving. Of course, this whole thing has been, being an empath, I'm like, I got hit a couple of times. I sat right down, and I'm sure you realized when I was playing it before in the beginning, it affected me, you know?
Sure.
Makes me cry.
Yeah.
Makes me cry.
Yeah, well, you know, it's good to see leaders when they actually lead. I think you're trying to make that point, too. And when they actually have the courage to take a stand, a controversial stand, and stand on their heels and defend it. I want to put a shout-out here to the latest thing that happened this past week. Pope Francis, of all people, came out on the progressive side of the environment. How wonderful. His encyclical is out of sight. It's so good, and it is so common sense, and it's for the poor. It's for everybody, really.
I was going to say,
so
it's
good.
For everybody.
Yes, it's awesome.
This, I actually, over all the social medias, I reposted that with the words that this neo-pagan was sending a humble thank you to the Vicar of Christ.
Yeah, right.
He really...
Well, he deserves credit for that because he's revolutionizing that church slowly but surely. He's getting rid of all the old crap. He's not going to change everything overnight, but I love the changes that he is making. They're all positive.
Yeah. Yes, absolutely. And
he's trying, but, you know, the Red Hats run the store, so he's got his work cut out for him.
He does, but you know what? He appoints Cardinals. Remember that, too. So he can kind of stack his own deck. And I'm looking for him to be in for a long time to have a very positive influence on what can be a very conservative organization.
Yeah.
Right. Well, the thing is, being a voice that many follow, and if nothing else, matter of fact, I have a coworker who's Catholic, and but he's climate change, that's all deniers. That's just money-making generation. You know, he's quoting what he's reading on the Drudge Report and that kind of stuff. Go ahead.
This guy needs to understand the Pope was a scientist. He knows what he's talking about. He was actually a chemist before he entered the priesthood. And, you know, he knows what he's talking about. He's a very intelligent man, and he shouldn't be just marginalized as, oh, he should just stay out of that. Oh, Jeb Bush had such a crazy reaction to it. Oh, I don't get my economic policy from my bishops or my cardinals or my popes. You know, what a jerk. And Santorum was saying, the church has gotten it wrong on science a few times in the past. I think they ought to just stay to theology and all that kind of stuff. You know, he's missing the point, too, because this guy was a scientist. He knows what he's talking about.
I was going to say, in English 101, what you learn in logical argumentation, that pitfall tactic that he used was called a divertive tactic.
Right.
Had nothing to do with the subject that we're discussing.
Exactly
He couldn't attack the message, so he attacked the messenger.
That's right.
It's
yep.
a divertive argument. Very good point.
Thanks for pointing that out, Wayne.
Well,
Go ahead, Gwen. I'm sorry. Please go ahead.
Well, the other point here, too, I would bring, because this is my side of the rainbow, gentlemen. Get a healthy planet and community and people are the realm of a spiritual guardian.
Mm-hmm.
You know, very much so. And the ancients knew that science was sacred because it showed us who we were and how to keep ourselves well and fit and to get along with one another. So when these asshats, Republican, Democrat, whatever, stand up and say the Pope has no business sticking his nose in it because he's the vicar of Christ, he's also a head of state. He's the complete leader.
The Vatican is its own country.
The Vatican has
its own representatives.
That's right. He's good enough to address Congress when he comes over, if it goes well for the Republicans.
Oh, that's going to boomerang so bad on Boner.
Yeah, it has, hasn't it? I mean, really.
And Rubio and all the rest of those knuckleheads.
You know, when Jeb Bush puts down the Pope gently but says, you know, he's out of his realm, he's saying that the health of this planet and its resources and the communities that fill it are not a spiritual part of our lives, and I disagree with that.
Right.
I disagree. Mm-hmm. I'm not talking about religion. I'm not talking about a dogma here. I am talking about the thing I said this morning or this noontime in ceremony, and that was the Native American saying, which the Lakota uses, O Matakwiasin, and that means all my relations. And it's very smart because we are all connected.
And it was a courageous stand to take from a conservative's vantage point. It was a courageous stand to take, and one that was controversial, of course. But it immediately got great following among many, many, many people, and it's important for him to do that. So hats off to Pope Francis.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, I agree. And now the idea that gun sense is going to be just another round robin is it leaves us hanging, you know. It leaves us all hanging. The leadership just sucks.
Or lack thereof.
Well,
yeah.
You know, they rammed through another TPP bill in the House, and they sent it over to the Senate. And this time it was a standalone bill where 28 Democrats went traitor and joined with the Republicans to pass this awful, terrible thing authorizing Obama to get fast track, and they're going to send it over to the Senate. Now they don't know yet how it's going to go. They think there is a chance that we might be able to prevail there yet. Let's hope. Even though the Senate had originally passed it, but this is a whole new bill, and you know we'll see what happens. That's why I'm encouraging people to call the Senate offices. Call 202-225-3121 and demand to talk to your senators. And when you get to the particular office of each of your senators, let them know in no uncertain terms you do not want fast track to be granted and you do not want the TPP to be passed. It'll be an absolute disaster for the rest of us and the rest of the world. It's just bad.
Well, I know my senator Barbara Mikulski will not be voting for it.
That's good. That's good. And hats off to Rosa DeLauris, too, for taking the stand she did, the courageous stand in the House. It didn't do her any good, but she's on the right track. There's no doubt about it.
Right.
So you got to let all your, especially your Democratic senators, know in no uncertain terms you do not want this horrible bill to go through. You want it to be defeated and extinguished forever. It's a terrible bill.
I was going to say something, and of course, yeah, as you know, what I keep trying to preach to is the de-escalation of the standard of living of the working middle class, the vast majority, the biggest, you know, those that actually pay the taxes that support this country. It's just nothing more than another downward pressure on the working middle class in this country.
Well, the bill, as stated, will give the president, whoever the president is, regardless, you know, Obama won't be there in 6 years, but the next 6 years, whoever the president is will have the fast track on all kinds of trade bills. That you just wait. There are going to be a flood of them coming forth because that's what the corporations want.
And
this has got to be extinguished right now.
Right. And I'm not going to use the generalized statement of saying they're all, but the gross vast majority will all be corporate sponsored.
Oh, you bet they will. Yeah, and they'll all be bad for workers. And they'll all be good for big corporations and CEOs. And they've got to be defeated. They've got to be completely obliterated.
You know, I saw an interesting thing happen when I was watching Bill Maher. I agree with him as much as I disagree with him. But he had Bernie Sanders on, and Bernie came on. He got a huge applause. He spoke about speaking the truth on all the issues. He did a wonderful job. He just never really got to Charleston. And when Bill Maher said, well, I got to go to the panel and the cutoff for Bernie's talk at the beginning of the show came, the thunder of applause and catcalling and all that for Bernie Sanders was incredible.
He's drawing huge crowds everywhere. The major media is ignoring him. That's the problem.
I got to tell you, so who was the last guest on Bill Maher was Ann Coulter. I wish he'd played Blamer.
I'm sorry.
At the beginning of the show when he's going to have her on because it's just too horrible to sit and listen to her make it up as she goes like some Bill O'Reilly and be
She's vomit personified.
She's really bad. I've actually called her name I don't use. And but it was incredible because the every one of her point makers, bullet points that she uses that usually gets rousing applause from the idiots. It was dead silence in the audience.
Good. Good.
And when she said she was sitting there opposite the Hispanic, I think he's a Hispanic congressman from Illinois.
Uh-huh.
she was talking about, you know, she's made the claim that Mexicans are rapists like Donald Trump has, I think.
Yeah,
oh,
yeah. Yeah, you beat me to the punch on that one.
Yeah, all of that. Yeah. And
murderers, rapists, all kinds of things.
He was just aching to get at her, to have a discussion with her, but she was backing away from him, and Bill could see that, you know, he was actually trying to build a wall there so it didn't get out of hand. But the thing was that when she said things like that were toned down for his show but still innuendoed it or whatever, you could hear people in the audience calling her name.
Good.
Yeah, good.
Yeah, she's a condescending little shit ass is what she is. And she's a snide little bitch who's only out to be controversial so she can get attention and sell her crazy books and her insane theories. She is a detestable, detestable human being.
Jack, let me come back to what I said earlier. If you just learn the pitfalls in logical argumentation, the generalized statement, the divertive argument, the straw man argument. Help me out here. There's five of them. Right, but if you just learn them and apply those to what this right-wing blowhard like Ann Coulter, like Bill Rush Limbaugh and stuff, you'll find
out. Like Bill O'Reilly, like all of them.
Exactly. You'll find out that the vast majority of everything they're saying, because notice I'm not going to say everything they're saying because that's a generalized statement in itself. The vast majority
of
everything
they're
saying will not stand the test of, is this an accurate statement? Does this have any validity? Is this even worth value of considering? They fail.
It's faulty logic.
All those
it's
tests.
Cynicism.
Exactly.
It's disgusting.
It's not just that it's faulty logic, Jack. It's that it's calibrated to come to a specific.
Yeah, it's diabolically calibrated. You're right. It's terrible.
It's the whip of the nut jobs, and I'm quoting Jack Kemp on that. When I had the hour-long one-on-one with him back in the early 2000s.
90. Oh, okay.
All right. And I told him, I said, I'm concerned about the Republican Party embracing the reactionary right. But, of course, there was, and his quote was it was an easy demographics to bring out at voting time. When they decide to whip up, and I'm doing this in quotation marks, whip up the nut jobs to get out to the polls to vote for their policies.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Gentlemen,
that's really what the upper echelon of the Republican Party really feel about those that, you know, working, you know, six-packs Joe, right, working middle class, but going to pronounce that he's a conservative because he listens to Fox News and, you know those people are right, so. It doesn't.
Deluded man.
They don't have the education to realize that they're listening to an infomercial.
Well, they can't critically think. They've never been taught how to critically think. They've never had the example of critical thinking placed before them.
Exactly.
That's a tragedy.
Gentlemen, we've got about 5-6 minutes left of program, and just before we go, I wanted to do this. I thought it'd be a nice thing to have it out there in the air again. The Post and Courier in Charleston this Sunday posted a remembrance of the 9 people who were killed in Charleston this past week. And I thought it'd be nice if we read their names.
Oh,
and
yeah, let's do it.
Please do.
There was Cynthia Hurd, 54, a library manager whose life was dedicated to books, children, and church. There was Susie Jackson, 87, a mother figure to generations in her family and a renowned cook of collard greens. Ethel Lance, 70, a church custodian who found strength in a gospel song to overcome life's challenges. DePayne, Middleton doctor, 49, a minister whose angelic voice could heal troubled hearts. Clementa Pinckney, 41, a pastor and state senator who lent his booming voice to the voiceless. Tawanza Sanders, 26, a barber, poet, and aspiring entrepreneur ready to take the world by storm. Daniel L. Simmons, Sr., 74, a minister who served as a model of endurance and service to God. Sharonda Singleton, 45, a pastor and coach who became her runner's biggest cheerleader on and off the track. And then Myra Thompson, 59, a builder of faith who worked to restore her beloved church and its properties to their full glory. Those are the people who died this week.
Yeah, and
every one of them was a credit to humanity.
Right. This church has been burned down and attacked in the past because it is a black church in Charleston,
right.
South Carolina.
It's a very famous place, too. This is where the freed slave, Dewar, he built it. And it's where he was captured for sedition and treason to the Confederacy. Badly, but
no. Well, so they, they made rules to be able to arrest him and try to silence him. I mean, it's the utmost totalitarian oppression that they can whip out and serve on somebody just to get them shut up and, again, keep them from getting too uppity.
Yeah, it's terrible.
I'd like to remind people that they can find Jack Jodell's blog post at saturdayafternoonpost.wordpress.com.
Yeah, it's at jackjodell53.wordpress.com. Yep.
Okay. Or you can just Google Saturday Afternoon Post.
That's better. That's good.
Yeah, that's the one I go with.
Yep.
The Mind and Times of F. Wayne Johnson, correct?
Yes, ma'am.
And I want to remind everybody that we are sponsored by Roundtree7, that's the number 7.com. You can go on over there and check out that blog. There are a lot of great posts over there, too. I want to...
Great writing.
Hat tip, P.E. Nolan and David Williams, because they provided some of the information that I used today in the beginning of the beginning of the show.
Both of whom are very typically incredibly smart and brilliant.
Yeah, there's a lot of really far out posts going on over in Journey.
Great people.
Seven.
And like we should all do, they keep pushing forward. I want to mention one more time that number we've got to call this week and let your senators know to vote against Fast Track and against the TPP. That it's 202-225-3121. Ask to talk to your senators, both offices. You've got two senators. Talk to both of them and let your senators know, especially if they're Democrats, do not vote for Fast Track and do not vote for the TPP.
Very well, Spencer. Yeah, I was going to say, and I'll close and say, a truly intelligent person, one that can truly think for themselves, will never, ever sign on to what the conservative vantage point is coming from, like the Rush Limbaughs, like the Ann Coulters, like the O'Reillys. It just does
like
not
the
stand
Hannity's.
Up to any, and the especially the Hannity's, right?
Yeah.
It just does not stand up to the test of true and accurate statements.
Good point, Wayne. Good point.
Yeah. Google pitfalls of logical argumentation.
Yep. Very good. Good advice.
The rules that you apply. That makes it real easy.
Thank you, gentlemen. As always.
Well, thank you, Gwen, and thank you, Jack.
Yes, thank you both. It's very, very enjoyable again, and I think we made our points, and I hope people will listen to it and follow it, and they will definitely benefit as a result.
Very good, and everybody have a good week, and I'll talk with you next week.
Yes, looking forward to it. Have a great week, everybody.
Please remember that Black Lives Matter.
Well stated,
yes.
Glenn. It needs to be stated. That's a good way to close this. Good night, all.
gentlemen.